You're listening to the Who Are You Really podcast.
A podcast that features interviews with the captivating people we've met. Liv and I have learned that everybody has a story.
Whether it surprises you, shocks you, or resonates with you, stories have a way of connecting us, offering new perspectives, and acting as a reminder that we're not in this alone.
And there's nothing we love more than bridging people together in our little big planet.
We'll get vulnerable, raw, and real with our guests from all over the world.
I'm your host, Lydia Clemensovich.
And I'm your host, Olivia Poglianich.
Welcome to our safe space. No judgment, no egos, all the feels and all the fun.
So pull up a seat, get cozy, and let's dig a little deeper together.
Oh my goodness, I'm all in the feels, everybody, because we had one of my closest friends on our episode today, and I'm like reaming with gratitude and abundance right now, and that's the feeling of having good relationships in your life. But the person that we brought on the podcast today, her name is Naz, or Nazarene Njeru, and she is somebody I met in university, and we kind of talk about the story in the interview, so you'll have to listen more to that. But I'm just really energized and buzzed from it, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Naz feels like an old friend, even though we just met, and she is so brave and articulate and kind and just such a intuitive, introspective soul. Like she said it very well to the two of us after that. You could just tell we had this energetic connection, and we went from topic to topic, whether it was something really personal and vulnerable from her past and things that she's healed from as far as body image and, you know, the vulnerability of living by yourself on the other side of the world in a really cold climate when you're from a very hot, big city. We also touch on an extremely important and relevant topic right now, racism. Grab a pen and paper because you'll want to take notes this time.
And grab a bevy of your choice and buckle up. This is all sorts of wonderful and deep. Hello and welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am so excited about our guest today. She is one of my closest friends, the lovely Naz, or Nazarene Njeru. Welcome!
Yay!
Welcome!
Thank you so much, ladies, for having me. I'm so excited to speak to both of you, and it's just going to be a great conversation.
Yeah, Naz, when Olivia and I were talking, I was thinking about, you know, the moment that you and I first met at Carleton University in Ottawa. And I don't know if you remember the exact moment, but I remember my first impression of you was that you had great style. I was thinking about it. And I remember you wore like a really nice hat and you were just looking so good. And that was before I even talked to you, of course. I was just like, oh, this girl really knows how to dress. And then we were both volunteers for the International Student Office at Carleton. And this was in both of our last years of university. And so we were at the same orientation, prepping us for welcoming new international students. And then there was a moment where Naz and I were in a classroom with a bunch of other people. And I think we just got to talking about travel and connections and moments. And I told her about a specific experience that I had in Bosnia and Herzegovina that really touched me at my core. And Naz just was so there with me and present, and we both started crying. And I knew in that moment that this was a beautiful soul. This wasn't like anybody I really meet on a daily basis. And that kind of solidified our friendship. So I'm just so excited and honored to have you.
Just as you were saying it, I still remember that like it happened yesterday. The feelings were so raw. And I think it's just a beautiful moment when two people can just instantly connect on emotion, you know, a shared emotion of hope. And I could feel that you missed that place. And it was such a beautiful moment. And I like that we were also not afraid to cry. I think we were in a room and we didn't even care. And I think someone else came in and was like, are you guys okay? And we were like, oh my gosh, we've just had this beautiful moment that's so unexplainable. So I'm so glad we got to share that.
And Naz, that was later on. I met you, you know, like I said, in our last years of university. And so now I'd want to get into your journey beginning at the beginning of university before I had met you, and your journey to come to Canada and to a new country. Why did you decide on Canada as a place, and how did you feel at the time that you moved?
So I'm from Nairobi, Kenya, born and raised. I moved to Canada when I was just, I think, 2 weeks before my 18th birthday. So I was still 17. Honestly, the reason I moved to Canada was just random, to be honest. I hadn't really planned on moving to Canada. I was setting sights more into the US. Typically, I was trying to just get a good education. And applying to the American schools didn't really pan out. And so I thought, oh, okay, next best thing would be Canada. And a former person in my school was a student at Carleton, actually. Mm-hmm. And when I started digging into it, it just seemed much more easier. They seem much more student friendly in terms of the visa process. It didn't feel very stringent. And so I was like, yeah, you know what? I could see myself in this so-called Ottawa, capital of Canada. Oh, they speak French. That would be great. I can practice my French. I never did. and then the canal. I was like, okay, the canal, I'm sold. And so I remember telling my family that I'd made this decision, and they were honestly so shocked. You know, no one had ever gone to Canada. Where was this coming from? And so it was just that really nervous situation with my parents. Like, we didn't even have family there, whereas we have family estates. But I was very adamant. I was like, you know, maybe I'll just be there for a year and then I can move to the States. Let's just give it a go. And I'm so grateful that my parents were very behind it. And yeah, I just like sort of packed my bags, and my mom and I came to Ottawa, which is also another very funny story. She felt that she had brought me to the countryside of Canada just because the airport was so small. There were no direct flights from like Europe to Ottawa. So it was just such a random experience. But just before she left, she said, I'm sure you're going to be in good hands. You're not going to get into any bad trouble because it's such a small town. But yeah, I think that's kind of why I picked Canada, really honestly, not even choice, just by chance. But I'm so, so thankful, so grateful that I stuck through. And yeah, I'm still living here. So I'm currently in Toronto right now.
That's such a funny story. I can only imagine coming from Nairobi, which is quite a big city, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. How many people live in Nairobi roughly?
I think like 5 million or more.
Okay, a lot.
And yeah, so definitely very much a city girl. And then coming to Ottawa, which I really find is between a town and a city. It's somewhere in the sweet middle of that.
Mm-hmm. And you did it by yourself, didn't you? Like you said your mom dropped you off and went home. Like, what was that like? You were still 17 years old at the time.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. It's interesting because we have both very different stories about it. I felt that she didn't cry enough. Well, she felt that I didn't cry enough. But it was very nerve-wracking, to be honest. I felt that there was a lot of pressure as first in family, and essentially the first person in my family to get a degree. There was so much pressure in just making sure that I was successful. And that my parents had really sacrificed to bring me to Canada. And so I think there was a lot weighing on my shoulder. But at the same time, I really appreciated Carleton's International Students Office that really allowed me to integrate and immerse myself in society in a very slow, intimate way with other international students. And that's where I ended up meeting Lydia a few years later. And so I think that was really nice just to sort of be with other like-minded people who are all far away from home. But yeah, it was very, I would say the first few months were quite difficult, especially on the winter.
I could only imagine how you must have felt.
Yeah, I honestly didn't own proper boots because I thought they were too ugly. And so I had rain boots, pink rain boots. And I honestly thought I would get frostbite every single time because my feet would freeze so horribly. But thankfully, did not lose any toes. I survived. But yeah, just it's a beautiful experience and it's allowed me to appreciate seasons, honestly, and really kind of look at the juxtaposition with our lives as well, right? So you just have to appreciate the weather.
Besides the weather, which I can only imagine coming to Ottawa weather, which I don't know the Fahrenheit equivalent, but it is like minus 30 degrees Celsius on a good day in the winter, just for those listeners. So it's quite treacherous. But besides the weather, what would you say were, you know, some of the harder adjustments you had to make?
Being an avid traveler, thankfully, I think I came in a bit feeling a bit overconfident because I traveled to see family across the globe. And so for me, I thought that would just, it would be quite easy, not really understanding that visiting a place is quite different from actually living it. It's just two different realities. And so essentially, I would say the culture was a bit hard. I would say the loss of community, because shortly after meeting with international students, we go into Frosh Week, which is like, you know, this first few weeks where all these first years come in. And it was quite overwhelming, to be honest, and feeling pockets of loneliness and just trying to figure things out. You could see a lot of people felt freedom, and but we're doing it in a very different way. And so I think a lot of the times I kept asking and questioning myself about my own values, because I'd grown in such a, in a culture that was very much strict. And so, you know, seeing people drink, was that okay? You know, seeing people party, was that okay? What about my classes? And so I always felt that I was very caught in between, where I did want to immerse myself, have fun, but at the same time, there was that really looming thing of just the financial sacrifice that my parents had gone through for me to be here. And so, to be honest, I ended up actually going into depression my first semester of university. And I think that was just coupled by just being unable to speak out. You know, my parents would call and I wanted everything to seem perfect. And so there was a lot of shame that I was carrying. Just, you know, wasn't doing so well in my classes. I was really just struggling to find my place. And I had come from a smaller high school where, you know, everyone knew everyone. I had been such a part and parcel of the community, and coming now to a school over 3,000 kids and just kind of feeling, where's my place? Who am I? What's my identity? And it really felt like there was a loss. And unfortunately, I didn't really share that with a lot of people, and isolated, and, you know, decided that it's just better not to tell anyone because I was so embarrassed about it. So yeah, it took me a while. And then eventually, I would say in my second semester, I heard about a program that kind of gave you your own personal guidance counselor and / therapist. And so I ended up joining that program. And I think that really brought me a lot into track, just kind of having someone where I could share my fears, share my just the things I was going through, share my disappointments, and them helping me to stay accountable as well was really important. But yeah, I think being first in family, I'm also the oldest sibling, it just felt very isolating. And eventually when I got into my second year, just speaking to more friends definitely helped. But yeah, I think it was definitely not the best transition. I would say, you know, right now I'm so passionate about students that do come abroad and having conversations with them and just kind of trying to mentor them and coach them and let them know that their feelings are valid and that they can really overcome a lot of the fears that they have. And it's just about being honest with yourself and taking it a day at a time.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that. That was extremely vulnerable. And I'm imagining myself in your shoes throughout that journey. And you are so brave, first of all, like to be able to do something like that, jump into a new culture, jump into a world where you're by yourself. The weather is so different from what you're used to. Like, it's a high pressure environment because it's a university and universities are so intense. And to do that all by yourself must be like a very, very difficult thing on so many levels. Yeah, it's amazing that you were able to accomplish that and be the first in your family to accomplish that degree. Like, that is something to be hugely proud of. And thank you for sharing that with us. I imagine there were so many things, you touched on quite a few of them, that made the adjustment quite difficult, maybe like some kinds of culture shock. But I'd be curious also, you're welcome to share if you have like a funny story that just popped into your head about culture shock, because I'm sure there's many. I'm also curious about what you may have learned about your own culture by living in another one.
In terms of my culture, it was actually this really, I had a class, it was on post-colonial Africa in my, I think, second or third year. And we were discussing Kenya. And the teacher brought up a few things about our journey to independence. And I remember being, you know, quite excited, you know, well advanced with that topic. And so I was like, yeah, this is my jam. I understand this. Only to hear him talk about the story completely differently. And I remember being quite struck. I was in shock, actually. Like, I could not believe it. And so I quickly texted my cousin, who I also view as my mentor. He's back in Kenya now, and said, hey, this is what I found out. Is it true? And he said, it is true. And so I was like, but why have we never discussed this? Why have I never seen this in my textbooks or whatnot? And, you know, he said, there's a long history of kind of repressing that history. And so I remember just feeling quite discontented and very, almost like what I had been learning was a sham, was a fabrication. And so it really pushed me further to dig deeper into that sort of history, to find out really who are we as people. And I think for me, that became a very long journey where I started really critiquing some of the things that people had kind of grown up with, very much the norms and the systems that people had always kind of grounded themselves in. And I would say that then started, brought up this division that I sometimes feel now when I go back, because for me, it's, you know, I'm like, we need to talk about this more. We need to talk about this history. And for a lot of people, it's like, well, it happened in the past. Let's kind of move on. It doesn't really matter. And so I think what it did teach me in this instance was that history can be fabricated, that we really do have to dig deeper, that we really have to also question our identity and where it's coming from, where is it being grounded. And, you know, a lot of people, Canadians, were quite shocked that I spoke English and that, you know, all these other things. And, you know, it's been quite difficult to sort of try and explain to them, well, the reason why my parents didn't talk to me in my mother tongue was because they believed that English would make me a global citizen. You know, they felt that English was my best bet at making it in this world. And so sometimes I feel like I lack, you know, because people are expecting you to, you know, have these ethnic stories or, you know, just bring in all your culture. And a lot of the time it's like, well, there's a lot that I don't know because of the way I was brought up and because of their situation and, you know, what they wanted to do best for their child. And so sometimes that's made me feel that I lack and that, you know, I'm not perfect and I need fixing. But I think what I've also learned about it is that it also reflected to me that also Canadians are not willing to also talk about some of the histories of their country as well. And so we're kind of all in this place where we want to kind of pick and choose what makes sense, what seems less heavy. And that can sometimes be an issue. And so in a way, being here has made me more truthful. It's a thirst for truth, have a thirst for unbreaking things, breaking it down and really trying to get to the nitty-gritty of what things mean. Why do we believe in things? Why are we following the one, you know, person? Why can we follow the other way? And so just trying to really decolonize my mind has been really such a big journey since I came to Canada. And I really don't think I would have gotten to this point if I hadn't come here. And so I'm very appreciative of that. Of course, it has come with ups and downs, but at the same time, I think I'm on my own journey and I appreciate that. I'm learning in this regard.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you said there is so true. And I can only speak also from my experience, but I remember also being in the, you know, classes at university and thinking, wow, like I didn't know this was, like you said, Nat, like on Canada's history, and I didn't even know a lot about world history besides World War II and World War I, and I didn't know about colonization and imperialism, but it was really a big unpacking and being curious and going further and questioning ultimately, which is so important. You know, you hit on something that I think like Olivia and I wanted to talk about, which when you mentioned that people didn't expect that you spoke English, did you have any other kind of hard or bizarre moments where people also had other expectations that you faced?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like our university had such a dynamic group of either second generation or third generation Black Canadians. And so at least there was that group of people that I ended up being friends with towards the end. But I guess in the beginning stages, when I hadn't found that community yet, there were times when people just kind of ask me, like, oh, you're from Africa, like it's probably not developed. And, you know, just being very stereotypical about some of the things they would ask me, you know, about like Hakuna Matata and you know, the Lion King.
Wow.
And wow. Yeah. And so it was just hard, you know, I was like, this is 2012. How do you not know anything about the world, you know, or even just ask? It's about asking with the right tone and without assumptions. And so, yeah, I do feel like I did struggle, especially even I would say with certain roommates as well, was very hard as well. And, you know, at that time I was also educating myself on certain issues like racism, because I came from a very different culture where it's experienced in a different way. And so sometimes now when I look back, I'm like, maybe that actually wasn't okay. But I was, at that time, I was so able to excuse so many things from people because I thought that there was, you know, that I'd actually done something wrong, or it was more of a misunderstanding. I didn't realize the implications or the power dynamics between those issues. And I would say it took me a while, and I think I'm still learning about it as well, because I find myself very much in the middle, being from the continent, not necessarily being Canadian, and trying to sort of navigate that space as well.
Yeah, that's extremely well said and so interesting, and you touch on so many different things. Like, my brain wants to go in three directions right now. Let's table the part about racism, because I think that's super important and obviously extremely relevant, especially coming from the US. But the other thing I kind of wanted to, I guess, iterate or just share like a sense of compassion with you for is this duality of identity and not really necessarily knowing like which one you are, because I'm Hispanic and my father's from Cuba, first generation, and he came to America and just spoke English. I never spoke a word of Spanish. So I can understand what you're saying in that way. Like, oh, I'm not really that Latina, but I ticked this box to get into university. And did I only get in because I'm Hispanic? Like, I don't know. So I empathize with that. And when you mentioned decolonization, like of the way you think, I think that's incredibly interesting, of course, from the racist angle. So let's go there. But also as a global citizen, I feel this weird like duality with how I perceive my own country. Like, America is the world's police, bully, and enemy. Sure, it's the land of freedom and opportunity, but I have a similar mini story to share about when I was in Vietnam and I learned about the Vietnam War. And I learned that we dropped so many bombs on the country of Laos just because they were leftover bombs, that 98% of the soil in that country is unfarmable and there's still Agent Orange in the soil. And to learn these things firsthand, wow, we don't have any of that in our textbooks. We barely talk about Asia, let alone any region that's not ourselves. Mm. We barely talk about Canada. So I understand what you mean too by relearning your history. And history just seems to me like it's become this platform for every country to kind of tell their version of the story that makes them seem the best, right? But yeah, I guess in terms of what you were saying about racism, I think this is like an incredibly topical moment to be discussing. And I've learned so much through the Black Lives Matter movement. Like you said, the power structures is really interesting too, because there's some things that, obviously I mentioned I'm Hispanic, but I have white skin, not that anyone can see, but I'm sure someone who's listening to this has seen a picture of me. And that gives me so much privilege for no reason other than the color of my skin and Sam's lid. Obviously, she's nodding along. What would you say to anybody who does have that inherent privilege, who's kind of waking up to the fact that this is very unfair, that we can do to, like, I don't even want to say to be an ally, because that's a bullshit word I've learned, but how can we better utilize this privilege to help equalize on a global scale, if that's even possible?
Yeah, wow. Noted question. Yeah, I'm going to say something that I always say to people when we have this conversation. I am not, by any means, I'm not an expert on this. As I said, I'm still learning a lot about it. But I would say essentially the first thing would be educating yourself. We should educate ourselves to understanding this institutionalized racism, what's happened, and sort of trying to understand the structures as well and how we fit into it. So I pictured like a board, you know, and we're all these tiny pieces. And so where do we fall under the board, and how can we then, from that, from our perspective or our position, how can we sort of unpack our own power dynamics or privilege that we carry? And then therefore, how can we then open up that space, right? And because I'm also just thinking of myself, even, you know, being able to come to Canada, that was in itself privilege, right? And yes, I say my parents, you know, did sacrifice, but essentially not everyone gets to study abroad. And so I understand that. And for a long time, I felt a lot of guilt. So I would also say breaking down that guilt, and guilt is so useless. So just throw it away. It's not going to take you anywhere. You are where you are. You cannot be upset. And so then the next step is, then how do you open up that space? How do you try to figure out, one, how are you interacting with other people as well? So even for me, being here, and when I go back to Kenya, and also recognizing how I speak to people, and I would say empathy is number one. You know, just having that compassion and empathy is so, so important. Yes, you might not be able to put yourselves in their shoes, but just being able to treat someone the way you would want to be treated and have that kindness for someone, you know, the way you'd want to be someone to show you kindness. Even, you know, like someone smiling at you in the shop, and you just know that you're smiling at each other because it's that quick moment of, hey, I see you, I acknowledge you, I hear you. And then I think, you know, if you are in a position of power, then kind of finding other ways to really broaden that space, you know, whether it's like putting pressure on your organization to have a diversity and inclusivity board that isn't just a slap on the name, but is actually doing work, that is actually trying to find out how people in the organization feel, how are they able to navigate the workspace as people of color, or, you know, people of different sexualities. And then kind of creating, there's this really interesting thing we're doing at my workplace, actually, is we each have now kind of like a mini groups, and we each meet every once a month. And that group is supposed to hold you accountable to the goals that you've set for yourselves in regards to diversity and inclusivity. And so whether it's, you know, I want to do X, Y, Z in my career and in my personal life, I want to educate myself more, then they're able to sort of have you, push you and challenge you as well. And then kind of give you this space where you can have these conversations and create this safe space where people can feel vulnerable, because sometimes it's also asking questions, and I feel like a lot of people don't know where to ask these questions. And I understand communities are hurting and they don't have time to answer these questions, but if we could just take a step back, because I really do think some people really want to help but just don't know where to sort of direct that help. So I would say even with the communities that are hurting, is kind of taking a step back and not being so, I don't know if this is controversial, but very defensive, you know, very angry, because it's like someone wants to help, but then, you know, you're so angry. And then where's the middle ground, you know? Mm. And I think it's like really on both sides. Like, yes, of course, it's on the people that have the power to change things, but it's also on the communities to want to educate people as well, or like not necessarily educate, but create these resources or create a space where people can think through things, which I don't sometimes feel like I don't see that as much. And I would say thirdly, intentionality, you know, even with just what has happened in the past year or 2 years, everyone sort of jumping onto social media and following a bandwagon without necessarily even knowing what it means or even thinking about their own self goal, you know? And so just by posting, that means nothing if you're not going to actually prove it with action. And so I think it's really making it in a very individualized goal with intention and saying, you know, I might post this, but I'm also going to do X, Y, Z based on what I'm posting. And I don't think there's a lot of that. There's a lot of everyone's jumping on, everyone wants to be seen as a good person. And, you know, what's goodness without intentionality? What's goodness without action? You know, it's just goodness. And we're kind of past that now. We're really in a space of action, but in a space of reinventing, you know, in a space of really reshaping the way we do things and the way we bring people on the table and the way we have a restorative conversation with each other. So that's kind of my own take on it.
Amazing. I got goosebumps. Thank you so much. That is like so helpful and so, so true. And empathy is absolutely key from both sides. Like these are things that have been going on for centuries and centuries, but at the end of the day, it's not our fault. I mean, there are people today who it is still their fault. I mean, oh my God, this whole country, forget about it. But you know, like there are some good people out there who just want to see people for what they are on the inside and try to make that happen. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's super useful.
You're welcome. And thanks for letting me speak on it.
Naz, when you're, you know, empathizing with people and you are such an empath and somebody who really tries to look at a broad number of perspectives, and why would you say that's important to you? And how do you protect this energy as well? And you and I have had personal conversations about this, but I'd love for you to share it with our audience.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so passionate about empathy. I sometimes feel like this, honestly, this isn't where I was born, but I think there are two types of people. You're born with it, and then there are other people who then cultivate it into a power force, into their own strength, into their own uniqueness. And I think I'm finally sort of getting them, finally kind of understanding what it means to really empathize for people, like have that compassion. At the same time, I think in terms of protecting my energy, which I have struggled with a lot, is just recognizing that it's really not about me. And so I think what I'm understanding with some empaths, sometimes we subconsciously make it about ourselves because we are taking on this energy. And so then we end up putting ourselves I don't know if it's a weird psychology thing, but we put ourselves in a victim sort of position, which we shouldn't. It's really about the people that we're emitting this energy to. And so I think for me, it's really been recognizing that it's not about me. It's about the other people. Yes, it's about me, but at a separate time. And so just finding ways to learn how to curate that energy for specific moments and when it's really needed. Because one thing that I started 2021 with is knowing my place. And what essentially that means to me is that I cannot empathize in every single situation, you know, that will kill me, literally, you know, that will break me down. And so I really think it's about, you know, recognizing what requires your energy and what doesn't require your energy. And then therefore, if it does require energy, to what extent, and sort of also being able to take a step back and not being burnt by the flame, you know, and not getting hurt in the process. Sometimes you can get too close to the situation, especially if it's people that we love and we care for. And not saying that that's wrong, but sometimes it's best if we take a step back. And if we also rely on other empaths as well to help us, to mentor us, we could bring them into certain situations where we feel that it's too close to home. So I think I'm also recognizing that I can pull on others. I can rely on others who are just like me. I don't have to only rely on my own strengths, but I can rely on other people. And then I think also making sure people have an ownness to their mess. I think sometimes as empaths, we want to excuse people because we put ourselves in their shoes. So of course we're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I understand. But no, sometimes people have to own their own crap, you know, and yeah. You messed up. Yeah. And we can't take that away. I think we're not fixers.
Yes. Sometimes we take on the role of fixer, and that's so much responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I was not born to fix your issues. I was born to fix mine. And it's honestly taken me so long to say that, but even just saying it right now feels so liberating and feels so powerful. And it doesn't mean I'm neglecting the people I love. It just means that I'm letting, you know, people are walking in their own journey. And so we have to own our own mistakes.
No, I love that. And it's so great because you said that all with such empathy. You know, yeah, you're giving boundaries. You're saying, I love you and care about you and I empathize with you and I'll be here for, you know, for some support, but you also have to take care of yourself, you know, that doesn't fall on me. And that's almost could literally just burn you out to such a degree, and it could magnify the more people, the more issues you think about in the world that we were even talking about previously. Mm. It's important to care and act as we've said, but I think, you know, just like one thing at a time, and then take care of yourself through it all and don't feel the weight of everybody's problems, all the problems in the world on your shoulders, because then that's not productive either. You're not actually going to help solve or reinstitute any change, quite frankly, because you're just in such a web of all of these.
Overwhelm, too much. Yeah.
Yeah, like systemic relationships, like it can go on and on. So I love how you said that. And what would you say are like your go-to habits or practices or routines to help take care of yourself through this?
We really need to allow people to also step in their own power. And by trying to fix people, we can easily become just band-aids, right? And so I think that's also such an important aspect of being an empath, as well as just really letting people step into their own light. Yeah, some of the things that I do, living day by day. Today's today, and that's all I have. And so I think that's really allowed me to be intentional and present with the hours that I have, with the day that I have. It's allowed me to I think even be more strategic, you know, because then I'm investing in my future. I'm investing in my tomorrow by being present today. And so I think that one thing. I would say the second thing would be to lean on people, as I mentioned, such as Lydia. We have conversations about, you know, once a month or every 2 months. And it's honestly so amazing to speak to such like-minded people. Like Lydia, who are so gentle and so caring. And then I think another thing is also, even with I can understand people being zoomed out, I think being intentional with that as well. And, you know, saying, okay, it's going to be in every 3 weeks or every month or so on and so forth. So really trying to find a balance to my own time and spending time with others. I would say another thing is leaning on my faith. I'm a Christian, and so just leaning on God has just been very important to me. It's just been life-changing, to be honest, and so I'm just very grateful that I can just, yeah, lean on my faith, lean on my community as well, my church community as well, and so that's been really, really lovely. I think the last thing would also be setting goals for myself, even if it's daily goals or monthly goals, but just being also adaptable and flexible to that, managing my time as well. has been really helpful. And I think reading too, there's so many good authors out there who are talking about these issues, whether it's about energy vampires, whether it's about empaths, and just kind of there's so much psychology that comes to it. And I end up learning so much from them. And shout out to my mom, who always sends me stuff as well from Twitter. Can you imagine? She's cool like that. So just from other healers on Twitter as well, which has been, you know, like, this is so incredible that now, you know, you can just communicate with a healer at any time, and that they become so much accessible and modern, and that's just been really, really great as well. So
those are all so incredible, and like, I feel super relevant because a few hours ago, I'm gonna butcher this, but I just had my Akashi records read. Do you know what that is?
I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
It's super cool. I also barely knew what it was, but basically this healer, she has this gift where they can activate a list of records that include your past life, anything and every thought that you're like working on in this present life. And then they can also articulate the future. So it's definitely like a form of clairvoyance. It's really interesting, Naz. A lot of what you're saying is reminding me of what this healer had said to me like just 2 hours ago about energy vampires maybe sucking your energy and really making time to do all the things you just said, like reading and finding ways to ground yourself. And this is something that I need to work on because I'm the type of person, and maybe we all are, if we're all empaths, who loves other people's energy and just being out in the world. But grounding within yourself again is like so important to just, I don't know, come back to your own energy and stuff. And anyway, this record thing was super, super cool. I can send you girls a link to it or something because I want to do more of it, definitely. It just talks about the fact that we're all souls just basically in this temporary moment living in the 3D existence here on Earth. Just like that Disney movie that just came out says. It's so good and so deep.
Oh, are you talking about Soul?
Yeah. Yeah.
That movie was... It hit me. It was just, have you seen it, Naz?
No, I haven't. I've been wanting to, but yeah, soon.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's just, that's so interesting to live. I would love to try that.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, it's completely true. But like, I've never heard of the term energy vampires, but I think I was like reading about self-care and just kind of checking in with yourself, and even, you know, scrolling can be an energy vampire in its own way. And then I have to be really conscious of that. And I'm very proud that I catch myself a lot quicker now. And like, I think, yeah, the more you start to tune in and learn about yourself and the world around you, the more sensitive you become and heightened to all of these energies, you can quickly kind of like take it on. And it is really important to ground into your own energy so that you can provide that love that's free from attachment and free from expectations and resentment, because that's not love, I mean, at the end of the day. But I think that's like helped me, yeah, for sure. I think just kind of release all of that. I'd be like curious to know, what is a moment in your life that you've healed from that you're really proud of yourself? You know, you did mention how you feel liberated when you made that statement. And so, yeah. Can you tell us about a specific experience where it was hard, but you really, you know, did the work and healed and came out of it on the other side?
There's so many, but the main one, or the one I was actually thinking about today, because my sister had reached out, is about really loving my body. I really struggled with weight issues for a very long time since I was young. And just hating on my body, you know, just not necessarily appreciating it, not nurturing it. And so I've gone through times where, you know, I was a bit overweight, and then there's times when I became anorexic as well. And so it's just been kind of this like up and down sort of situation that's been very tumultuous. And, you know, when you come from a culture where people comment about your weight, Lydia, you can kind of like attest to it living in Tanzania, you know, it's like, oh, you're looking like this, and oh, you're looking like that. And it's sometimes
I got called fat so many times, and I just had to really ground in the moment.
Yes. Yeah, because wow. Sometimes it's like, you know, a sign of wealth. Sometimes it's a sign of sickness. Like, you know, like that's kind of, I guess, the African spirituality and culture of the way they kind of determine weight. And so I think it's taken a long time for me to really break down. First of all, really work on myself and really heal from that and really recognize my body has brought me so far, you know, through so many things. Sorry, I'm going to get emotional, but, and like, I can't hate it, you know, just because like it's really been, it's really taken care of me through this crazy world, you know, and really protected my spirit. And so, I think by really breaking down those stereotypes and those thought processes, because it is thought patterns, and really unlearning it. And it's actually a day by day thing that I have to keep doing, you know, because it's very easy to kind of go back. And just, you know, I was looking at some pictures recently and I was like, I hated my body then. I hated my body. You know, like at what point was I okay with my body? At what point was I okay with myself? And so I just had to kind of take a step back, forgive myself, you know, forgive myself for the ways I have talked to my body, the way I've treated it. And then I think from there also, then I've been able to sort of dispel what people have said, like, fine, call me what you want to call me, but it's more of a projection of what you think I should look like, and not necessarily, it's not a me issue, it's a you issue. And so it's felt so lighthearted, you know, and I just feel like I've really come from far. And as I said, I'm nowhere where I want to be, but I'm definitely not where I started. And that's what matters. It's about progression and not perfection. And I'm just really, really thankful to where I'm at right now. And I realized it was also very much a psychological situation. So just healing my mind and healing my thoughts have been really important, and grounding myself with affirmations as well. Speaking to my body, you know, speaking to myself. And it really cemented, even during this pandemic of, you know, living alone, it's really made me realize, yeah, you know, you can be on your own. Like it's you and your body until the end. And so, you know, and I think one other thing was, how can I love people if I don't even love myself? You know, then does that mean that the love I'm giving to people is not necessarily authentic? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up. And so I think that has really, really cemented it. And just thinking of what I would tell friends, what I would tell a sibling if they came to me about this issue, why can't I pour into myself as I pour onto others?
It's so incredible. And you are such a brave soul. Like, honestly, you're so willing to be vulnerable with us. And I'm writing down so many of the things you're saying, because I'm learning so much. And you're also articulating a lot of thoughts that I have in my head, but way more succinctly and beautifully, like including when you said my body has protected my spirit. Because I think for a lot of us, and definitely speaking for myself, I've been too fixated on the mind. Like, the mind is the only part of my body that I'm interested in, because I've operated from the ego, right? And the ego is the thing that goes after money and career and travel. And I thought, oh no, I'm fine. I've traveled the world. I know myself. But the pandemic has really taught me, no, actually, you know, you haven't really dove into your body and have this respect and this relationship that you've mentioned so, so beautifully. And I also want to touch on the other thing you said that really resonates with me too, that what these people are saying about you and how you look or how you may not look, and same to you, Lid, is just a projection about their own insecurity. And that is so true. And that theme, psychologically, I feel like I keep coming back to, like, when people get so unnecessarily triggered about the weirdest things that I am or I'm not doing, it's so much more about them than it is about me. And that's such an empowering thought. And I give you so much credit for figuring that out. Like, all of us are in our 20s. I imagine there are people who spend their whole lifetime and they don't realize that. So that's so beautiful. Yeah, wow, that's really great. And funny, you actually started to answer a question we'd asked you before we even asked it, but I'll give you the opportunity to maybe answer it again, because Lid mentions that you are quite close to your siblings. And it'd be great to see, you said you're older than them too, I believe. If you have a piece of advice from all this wisdom you've gleaned over your international living, pandemic seems to have taught you a lot too, just life in general. Mm. What would be a great piece of advice you'd give to your younger siblings?
Sorry, I'm also going to get emotional about this. My siblings mean everything to me. Yeah, so it's Jude and Christina. I am with Christina, where there's a 10-year gap between us, and with Jude, there's a 12-year gap. They make fun of me all the time because I'm the cry of the family. And I guess one thing I would tell them is live your life, Ina and Jude, you know, just, live out your purpose. Do not be afraid. Be courageous. Be brave. And just pour into yourselves, you know. This world is so cruel, and we have to just stand our ground, stand firm in what we believe in and in our faith. And just go on. You're doing well. You know, you're doing better than you think.
Yeah, and just knowing you, Naz, and giving our audience just such a sneak peek, honestly, into who you are. You're leading by such an example, you know, like you are love in action because of the way that you love yourself and the way that you love other people. And yeah, that was just so beautiful. And your younger sibs are so lucky to have you as an older sis. They can stop with the crier. They probably say that, and then they maybe tell their friends, oh, my older sister is so cool. She moved to Canada, and she... We just never like to say that to our siblings, you know?
So true. Yeah. Olivia, do you have siblings as well?
Yeah, I have a stepsister who's basically like my blood now. I met her when she was 4, and now she's turning 23 this week. So yeah, wow. I've watched her grow up, and it's similar to what you're saying, you know, like you want to impart all of this wisdom on them, but I don't know. Also, it reminds me of what you were saying about empathy too. Like at a certain point, like take a step back because it's their lesson to learn at the same time. For some reason, when you guys were talking about that, it made me think of Brené Brown, who I absolutely adore. And she has a really good visual that she talks about for the difference between sympathy and empathy. She draws this visual that I just keep coming back to, where imagine you're walking down the street and there's a pothole and somebody fell into the pothole. Sympathy is kind of looking at that pothole from the ground level, kind of saying, hey, are you okay down there? But empathy is actually getting a ladder and climbing down with them. Now, I think what you two are talking about is like some of the problems as an empath is that we want to like pick that person up. Well, I don't know if I'm that much of an empath. I think I sometimes am, but I'll leave it to you too. You pick that person up and then you carry them up the ladder. It's like, no, they have to carry themselves back up the ladder, but at least you're down there with them.
But they're no better off. Like that's, I think, the biggest thing I've learned. Like you could go, you know, an arm and a leg to help somebody, but if you're going that much of an arm and a leg, like that person is honestly no better off than where they started. And that's, I think, also the biggest, like what we've been talking about and the biggest thing I've learned. And I can't force anybody to do anything. I can't make anybody. And quite frankly, I don't want to, and I don't think other people want me to do that too. So I kind of start to look at those behaviors that I was projecting too. And I think it was also coming from a place of trying to make me, myself, feel better. But at the end of the day, it wasn't, because you're not going to see actual results from that, you know? So you just have to, you have to be there for people and love people and just then lead by example and stay in your lane and realize that you can't control anything except yourself at the end of the day. And honestly, it helps me be, yeah, like a lot more lighthearted, but that's, yeah. Anyways, we could go on and on, but that's a really good analogy. The latter one, Liv, thanks for sharing.
Thank you. And by the way, I have like a wall of post-its right here. So I'm going to show you guys this one because this is my lesson of 2020/2021. And it says, let go of the need for control, which has been like my mantra this year, last year. Naz, I so relate to what you were saying about this pandemic teaching you to be present, because today is all we have. Because I think I spent the first few months worrying about when I could go to a concert again or when I'd be able to travel again. And I don't really think that's a fair way to live life, because then you aren't really fully present. And both of you beautifully articulated the value of the present moment today. And I'm so grateful for this present moment because you've said so many incredible things tonight. And big, big virtual hugs. We'd love to ask as our, I guess, final question, but it pains me to say final because I feel like we could totally keep going. Who are you really, Naz?
Yeah, I was thinking of that answer. And, you know, that's a very good question. I love the name, by the way, of the podcast. but yeah, I guess, who am I? I am a sister. I'm a daughter. I'm a person. I'm a person who wants to be seen and acknowledged, a person who wants to live out their dreams, a person who wants to who wants to live out their passions and doesn't want to be afraid of it, a person who wants to doesn't want to walk in regret, a person who just wants to change the world in a little way, you know, and kind of be the change that I want to see. I know that's super cheesy, but honestly, I think right now with everything that's going on, it's really about those little things that you can do to others and just serving others in humility. That's who I am, and who I hope to be as well. So as I said, progression or perfection. So I'm not where I want to be, but I certainly have come a long way, and my body's a testament to it.
Naz, I'm so happy to have had you on this episode and see the change you want to see. I mean, I know you do that already in your work and in your circles, but just by being on this podcast, I cannot wait for people to listen to it. And I'm sure that there's so many things that people are going to learn from you. If people want to know more about you, Naz, we always give, you know, a last opportunity if our guest wants to plug themselves or something they're working on or social media, whatever you want.
I am on social media, but I'm an observer is what I call myself. getting too overwhelmed by too many things. But if you'd like to DM me on Instagram, it's N-A-Z, and then my last name, N-J-E-R-U, for Instagram. I'm also on Twitter, but yeah, that's also, that works really well. And it's my full name, Nazarene Jaru. Feel free to always reach out. I'm inspired by people. I'm inspired by you too as well for starting this podcast, for really highlighting and uplifting your friends and really shining a light on them as well and letting them stand true to themselves. You know, we rarely find this today, you know. It's really about trying to showcase the best of ourselves, but sometimes it's the little things, it's the broken parts of ourselves that really bring hope to people. And so I'm so grateful to have been on this podcast. Thank you so much, Lydia. And Olivia, it's been so amazing. And I can't wait to see where this podcast goes. And it's such a shining light in a sea of just misery.
Oh, thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of Who Are You Really?
We'll be back next Thursday. Same time, same place. You can listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram at Who Are You Really Podcast.
Or feel free to join our Facebook group, The Humans of Who Are You Really, to connect to some of the people who have been on air and other deep thinkers and feelers.
If you liked this episode and want to continue listening, please subscribe and leave us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts and stories.
Until next time, sending love to you wherever you are.